Jane Morris is currently in Brussels too for the European Movement. And hi, good morning to you, Jane.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And you love it, Jane, when the TV leader, Jim Allister, is debating with you. He's with us this morning. Good morning to you, Mr. Allister.
Good morning, Mr. Nolan.
Well, it's kicked down the road again, Jim.
Yes, and of course...
Or at least there's the idea of it.
Well, there's the idea, and the Prime Minister seems to be buying into it, which would be very retrograde, because the people of the United Kingdom voted to leave. We didn't vote to leave in name only, and that's the effect of a transition period, that whereas notionally you leave in at the end of March next year, that in effect, for all intents and purposes, you remain a member, but in the worst possible circumstances, where you have no say, no input into the rules and the laws which will continue to govern you for the following 3 years or more, as I suspect might be the real intent, and all the time you pay for the privilege of being controlled and ruled by others. For the 21 months, we're going to pay $39 billion. If we add another 12 months, are we going to pay another, 15 to $20 billion of our money into the EU? I think that the suggestion's preposterous. And, of course, we got here.
Well, we do, of course, get some of that money back, so you're loading this.
Well, we get some of it back.
Right.
But
don't load it, then.
Well, the idea is preposterous, because it's all about, they say, in order to get an arrangement which avoids a hard border. I've one very simple question. Who is going to provide this hard border, whatever a hard border is? Who's going to provide it? The United Kingdom says... we don't need it. We'll not provide it. The Irish Republic says they don't want it. So who's going to provide it? Of course, the answer to that question is that the EU, who parade themselves as so opposed to a hard border, are the very people who, under their treaties, are going to insist on the Irish Republic providing the hard border, because the EU treaties require frontier states to provide and maintain their border. Either they give a waiver on that, which they could easily do, or we're going to get to the situation where de facto the Irish Republic provide the border that all this hullabaloo is about, not the United Kingdom.
Well, let's let Jane Morris reply to this.
I'd like to ask him the reason why there should be some form of protection of the goods coming into the European Union is because we don't want chlorinated chicken either in Northern Ireland or the European Union. So what are you going to do with your chlorinated chicken, Jim, whenever it's floating around the rest of the UK? And also, can I just say, I will agree with Jim on the point that he says that this is not a brilliant deal, this extension of the transition period. The far better one is that we all stay in the European Union. So let's go there. Would he agree that that's the best of all deals at the moment? Because we've got the laws of the paying into, and it hasn't done us any harm. And in fact, in Northern Ireland, it's done us an awful lot of good. And the backstop would be a second best, and at least we would have a good deal if we got the backstop. But the best deal of all is staying in the European Union, just like the Northern Ireland people voted for.
I'm sorry, the people of the United Kingdom were asked that question. They answered it. Yeah. And unfortunately, Jane wants to thwart and subvert that answer. But my politics are not built on chlorinated chicken. They're about much more important principles than that. They're about the principles of a nation state spending its own money, deciding its own laws, controlling its own borders.
So the question, Jim Allister. So the question, Jim, let's deal with the chlorinated chicken. And the reason we should deal with that is because the same principle could apply to other products that some people might be wary of.
For example, the checks
and balances. So in other words, Jim, how would you therefore then stop chlorinated? How do you think the EU can stop chlorinated chicken getting into its territory?
Post-Brexit. It's for the EU to control its own borders. That's what its own treaty
But surely,
says.
But surely, but you as a Brexiteer, But you as a Brexiteer must have thought this through as well. That will have been an issue. So how do you, if there is no border, how do you expect them protecting chlorinated chicken or those type of issues getting into the European Union?
Well, isn't that the EU's problem?
But can you think of a solution?
It's up to them to defend it.
So you don't know?
Why should some third country, namely the United Kingdom, provide the border for the EU? It's the EU that has to provide its own border if it wants a border, not someone else.
Jean Morris?
I don't want chlorinated chicken in Northern Ireland either.
You have it in your water.
I want also lead, children's toys from China that are covered in a lead substance that is not permitted in the European Union. There's plenty of other stuff that the European Union doesn't like in the outside.
Now, hold on a minute, Jane. Now, you're now loading this too, because why on earth would the United Kingdom government allow unsafe toys into its territory when it has ultimate control? So you're suggesting this free-for-all. There will not be dangerous toys into the United Kingdom just because we've left the EU.
Yeah, I'm not going to scaremonger. You're absolutely right, Stephen, that I would hope at the very least that the United Kingdom would have its own specific trade rules on goods that are seen to be unsafe. If you go back, I mean, chlorinated chicken, you're right, the Americans accept that, the Europeans don't. We have different regulations with regard to all of these things. But the point I'm making here is I have been very trusting, and consumer organisations are very trusting of all the European Union regulations, that protects the consumer. And that's what's valuable about staying in the European Union.
Are these rules we've heard about in the past, like we can't have bendy bananas?
Well, I know, but that's a tabloid headline, which is madness, you know, bendy bananas, for God's sake. That's been the absolute way in which the tabloid media has turned us against the European Union, and it's been wrong to do it because the European Union is good for us, has been good for us, and should stay.
I don't know that it is tabloid hype. Like, are you against a bendy banana, Jim?
Well, let's be very clear. Cut through all of this. The withdrawal bill, which is now the act, which is the legislation, which is now passed through Westminster, says that the day after we leave the EU, all EU rules continue to apply until the United Kingdom, in a democratic process, sifts them and changes them as they wish. So the day after we leave, we still have a prohibition on chlorinated chicken, on all those things, and the United Kingdom will continue, but this time by its own devices and for its own purposes, to make its own laws as to what sort of goods come into the United Kingdom. So this scaremongering that suddenly, when we leave the EU, we're going to be flooded with all sorts of nasty goods, is just that, scaremongering. It's not going to happen.
If we've known Brexit, if we've had a couple of years...
What is going to happen is that we're going to decide our own laws about what comes into our own country.
Why haven't we got that sorted already?
Pay our own way.
Why, we've known about this. The referendum has been... The result is in ages ago. Why hasn't this all been sorted now if it's so easy? Why are these rules not in place now?
Well, because until we leave, we're subject to EU rules.
Yes, but we can have the new rules.
We can't have a parallel system of rules.
Jim, no.
So until we leave, and then that's the
Jim,
sense
stop it now. Stop
that.
Stop
the sense of adopting.
No, Jim, stop
that's
it.
The sense of
stop,
adopting.
Stop playing
the situation
around
as is,
you
and then you change it as you go forward.
But that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying to you is, I'm not suggesting there would be parallel rules now. I'm saying that if it's as easy as you're suggesting, why are these rules not now written up, ready to go?
Well, I'm sure the United Kingdom departments are writing up rules.
Where are they then?
They cannot be published. They cannot be in place until we have left.
But you've just said they won't be ready to go.
Stephen, if you're interested in the discussion, let's have it.
Yes.
So when we leave with the EU rules in place, and then as suits us at our pace, we change them to suit ourselves.
Yes, but you're
that's why there's going to be no.
Yes, but you're saying
there's going to be no cliff edge
but you're,
Brexit
but
or anything
you are
else.
Saying as it suits us at our pace. In other words, you're conceding that the rules are not ready to go.
Well, some may be ready to go. I'm not in government. I don't know. But I'm quite happy with the situation that it's the democratic institutions of the United Kingdom that then look at and decide and change where they wish the rules which currently apply. That's the whole essence of Brexit, that we make our own laws.
Jim?
Can I come in here, please? Because Jim knows full well that it is the European Council that makes the laws on everything that happens here. And it is the British ministers sitting in the European Council that makes the laws. And this pretense that we're subject to laws that are made in Brussels is totally, totally inappropriate. Because every council, the minister is there agreeing it or not agreeing it, depending on their position. And that's whether it's agriculture, whether it's money, whether it's anything that Europe does. The ministers are there. And by the way, here's another point that everyone...
In most cases, they have no veto.
Pardon?
In most cases, they have no veto.
Laws
can be put upon you, as they have been, which we didn't agree to.
And here's an important one here. The European Parliament. And why do we vote every 5 years for a member of the European Parliament by direct elections if they don't have any influence on European laws? People are forgetting that Britain has had an input in the last 40
years. An input, but can be overruled by a majority vote.
The Parliament can only make the laws that the Commission bring to it. Cannot initiate any laws of its own. Any laws of its own. It cannot do that.
But wait. How does the Commission get its ideas? It's you and I, Jim. It's people in Northern Ireland, people in the whole of the European Union. Bring them to the Commission and say,
We've had this debate. The people.
Hold on now. Hold on, Jim. No. Hold on, Jim. Hold on. Let's let Jim speak.
Wait. Now, take an example of the peace programme in Northern Ireland. I brought Jack Delors to Northern Ireland in 1992, showed him what was wrong here. And he set up a peace program. That's how these things work. And you know, many billions of pounds have been put into Northern Ireland as a result of that.
Of our own money.
It was our influence on the
European Union. Of our own money.
That got the peace program in Northern Ireland. And why can you not see that's how things work? We influence the Commission. We get them to put the proposals forward. And the Council of Ministers says, yes. And that's exactly what happened in the peace programme. And it's exactly the example you should start using more
if
of.
Can I ask this question? Hold on a minute now.
Jane's living in the past. Yes, well, the decision is made. We're leaving.
Okay.
Stop refighting a battle you've lost.
Stop that. I haven't lost that battle, Jim, and I will not lose it. Listen to business in Northern Ireland.
Democracy.
Business in Northern Ireland doesn't accept democracy. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying you obviously don't accept democracy.
No.
You think that the views of 17.4 million people can be trampled in the gutter. That's your politics.
Stop talking that sort of language, trampled in the gutter. Of course, we respect
what you want to do. You want to take the views of 17.4 million people and shred them.
Can I say something very important that is overlooked in this process? When we entered the European Union in 1973, we did not have devolved government. We did not have a Good Friday Agreement. Look at now, with devolved government, things have changed. So we went in as one, agreed, but now we're different. And that difference has got to be recognised. And look at Scotland. They're saying, watch out, we're not being listened to. And that's the same in Northern Ireland. But Europe is listening to us. Brussels is listening to us, Jim. Brussels has offered us, as a set fallback, if you like, the backstop. And that could be the best of both worlds.
Be the best of both worlds. It would be utterly catastrophic for our economy. It would put a border down the Irish Sea, presenting barriers to our biggest market, GB.
No.
We sell 70% of our goods to GB, and you want to create a border and restrictions and regulations down the Irish Sea to impede that so as to facilitate the minority of our benefit of our trade elsewhere. That is economic.
Let's let Jane, because I want to hear your understanding, Jane, of how the border down the Irish Sea would not create an impediment to Northern Ireland trading with the rest of the UK.
First of all, it's not a border down the Irish Sea. It's absolutely no threat to the constitution of the United Kingdom. Brexit is a bigger threat to that. than a border down than customs checks in the Irish Sea. But also, can I ask this question, please?
Well, if there were... No, hold on, because I want the first question answered first, please, Jim. If these customs checks that would be happening if you got your way between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, how does that not create delay and paperwork and bureaucracy more than there is now? How does that not provide extra cost to business in Northern Ireland? And how does that not create hassle?
Because that can be balanced against the benefits we get of everyone wanting to invest in Northern Ireland, to boost business in Northern Ireland as a result of us being in the single market and the customs union. So once we establish that special position that we'll be in, business will flourish. Jobs will be created. If there's a few extra regulations on the Irish Sea, but you know that
it wouldn't be a few extra regulations, would it? It would be a massive overhaul for all business in Northern Ireland trying to trade to the rest of the UK. So that it would be a dramatic. Do you concede it would be a fundamental change of how we currently trade with the rest of the UK?
I don't concede that. It is definite that we would have to think twice about how we do it. By the way, a large percentage of our trade to the rest of the UK goes to the European continent. So we'll just find a different way to do it through Ireland, where they're doing their ports. There's other things we can do. By the way, we stopped mad cows getting into Northern Ireland by having health regulations on the Irish Sea, but nobody noticed that. But I also would like to know what Jim thinks about the rights border on the Irish Sea. So for gay rights, for women's rights, that's acceptable, but we've got to be careful of our beans and our bacon.
How come you are content with this border, to use your terms, Jim Alistair, down the Irish Sea when it comes to issues, as Jim Morris has brought up this morning, like gay rights?
Well, I'll deal with that in a moment, but you must let me deal with the points Jane made just before the news. She said this border down the Irish Sea would amount to very little. It wouldn't, in fact, impede our trade or anything else. Well, the flaw in her argument is this. If she's right that you can have a border such as that, which doesn't, though it's a different customs regime and though it's a different single market regime, doesn't impede your trade or anything else, then why can't you have it on the land of Ireland? Why can't you have an Irish border of that nature? If you can have such an innocuous border in the Irish Sea, which is driven by technology, then what is it that stops you having such a border with your lesser trading partner in the Irish Republic?
Do you know what?
If you can have it with your big trading partner in GB and it doesn't adversely affect you, then you can have it with your minor trading partner, the EU, and it won't affect you. So you can't have it both ways.
Do you know what, Jim? In the 20 years I've been speaking to you, I don't think I've ever said this. You might have a point. Jim Morris, how would you reply to that? If it's so effortless in the middle of the Irish Sea, how come it's not effortless on this island, Jane? Ah, Jane's dropped off. Let's see if we can get her back. Stay there, Jim. We'll make sure that we get you an answer to that question, because it's a good question, Mr. Alistair.
Thank you.
Don't mention it. Here's Edmund in Bangor. Good morning, Edmund.
I just wanted to discuss some things with Jim, who, as usual, exaggerates things a bit. First of all, we would not be paying 15 or 20 billion a year into the European Union. We pay 13 billion and get 4.5 billion back, which means we pay net 8.5. And Jim says that's our own money. Yes, but it's called taxation, Jim. You do exactly the same locally in the UK. And the Republic of Ireland, which Jim seems to have overlooked or is not going to mention, are currently recruiting customs officers to work on a hard border in Ireland. And it will be built by the European Union because they want to keep they want land borders between the European Union and countries outside the European Union. And that recruitment is going on at the moment. But I would like to ask Jim, and again, he kind of blankets over how the European Union is governed. I would like to ask him, what is the first European law that he would do away with as soon as we get in, as soon as we leave Europe?
Well, there are legions of European laws, all of which will need to happen.
So what's the first one you would do away with?
I would certainly lift some of the regulatory burden which applies to our industry. Because we're in the EU...
You use these generalizations. These regulations were agreed by the UK in a situation where they, in the Council of Ministers, where they did have a veto. One vote can stop any legislation that the Council of Ministers has.
You're wrong about that.
It is then worked on by the European Commission, which has a civil service of roughly 32,000, not the thousands and thousands and thousands. It's great bureaucracy that you always talk about, Jim. It's not.
You're wrong on two fronts on what you've just said. First of all, it's the European Commission, the unelected, unelectable.
No, they don't.
Well, now let's let Jim reply, Evan.
It's the unelected European Commission alone, which is allowed to bring forward proposals for legislation. They then proceed through a parliament, which itself can't initiate any laws, and they go to a council of ministers, which say A or nay to them. But it is not the council of ministers which initiates laws.
Okay.
It is not the parliament which initiates laws. And you were secondly wrong in saying that any member state has a veto on anything. There is only a veto on a minority of key issues. The vast bulk of EU legislation goes through on a majority system in the council of ministers.
Okay.
So get your facts right before we start addressing these issues.
The laws are initiated by the Council of Ministers.
No, they're initiated by the Commission. Only the Commission can bring forward legal proposals.
Okay, now
only the laws are passed on to the Commission and they're told to implement.
Evan, thank you.
The Commission does not make laws.
Okay.
The Commission does not rule the European Union.
Evan, thank you. Let me bring Jim Morse back in. Are you with us again, Jim?
Yes, I am. Yes.
So I'm intrigued actually because I said this morning, Jim, when your line had dropped off that, you know, Jim Allister might have a point this morning, as much as it might grate in the teeth of some to admit it, that he has suggested that if you're saying that these checks in the so-called border in the Irish Sea would be so seamless and it wouldn't be that burdensome, then how come the same principle doesn't apply on the island of Ireland if there were checks at the border here?
Well, it's simple because, first of all, ports and airports is where these checks would be, not down. The ones for fisheries was ones he should look at as far as...
No, but he's asking if it is so effortless between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, why wouldn't it be as easy between Northern Ireland and the Republic? It's a fair question, Jane.
Because, yes, and the answer is... It's exactly what is good is the fact that it will be in ports and airports. It would be every port coming into Northern Ireland, London or Aldergrove or whatever. That's where the regulation would be. And why it would be simple is because the infrastructure is already in place for all of that. So that it's not a border down the Irish Sea. It's ports and airports. And that's what takes it away from the Irish border. That's what takes it away from the Irish Sea. And this Irish Sea.
But he's not saying about taking it away. He's saying in terms of the bureaucracy, in terms of the amount of paperwork, the amount of delay, it would be the same, wouldn't it?
It would be, but the difference is it's at a port where the lorry gets off the port. And of course, they would have to give in more paperwork, yes. And they would have to have checks to ensure that these goods... And by the way, it's not just goods, it's people as well. That's something very important that has been very overlooked. So what I'm saying is it would be increased paperwork, of course, but that's the pity of leaving the European Union.
How is it people if we've got the common travel area?
Say that again?
How is it people if we've got the common travel area?
Well, what are you going to do with a lorry load of people wanting to come in? How do you check that? You know, or you know, I'm not the important thing is here is right our rights as European citizens in Northern Ireland.
Jim,
here's an important one that I want to mention is: do we have to have an Irish passport in order to stay European? And is that right? And is that correct? And I'm very, very interested in the fact that our group has taken this to the Ombudsman in Brussels here, in the European Ombudsman, just to say, is it correct that under the Good Friday Agreement, we have a right to be European? But does that mean the only way we can exercise that right is to get an Irish passport?
I asked this question. Jim Alice, are you still with us?
I am, I think, as your people know, I have to go very shortly.
Yes, no. My people have told me about that. Your people told my people. I think, Jim, that's actually an interesting question. I raised it at the weekend that Jane's just brought up. What's your understanding of that, Jim? Because we are entitled in Northern Ireland to be European citizens. Do we actually have, under the Good Friday Agreement, isn't it? Do we actually have to apply for an Irish passport, or do you believe it's an automatic right, Jim? Do you know?
Well, first of all, EU citizenship is an add-on to national citizenship, and it doesn't trump your national citizenship.
Yeah, I get that.
It's an add-on. What does EU citizenship mean? Good question. It's a pretty nebulous thing, but... someone in Northern
Ireland. But it's
not
nebulous because with it comes rights.
Yes.
Exactly, and the freedom.
Yes.
The freedom
let me deal with the question as best I can. If someone in Northern Ireland wishes to assert the fact that they are an Irish national, which would be the way in which then they would assert that they are an EU citizen, because once we leave the United Kingdom, British citizens.
Once we leave the EU, I don't think you're wanting to leave the United Kingdom anytime soon.
Yes. Once we leave the EU, British citizens will cease to be EU citizens. But those who claim themselves to be Irish citizens will continue to be EU citizens. But they have to assert that. They have to assert, first of all, their national identity as an Irish citizen with an Irish passport before they can assert
their EU citizens.
Yeah, but
do they? I wonder if you do need an Irish passport. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, you have to assert your Irish nationality before you can say that gives me EU citizenship.
I'm not sure that's true.
Wait a minute, Jim. No. Is that fair? This is just the question that's being asked now. Is that fair on British citizens living in Northern Ireland who don't necessarily want to have an Irish passport but want to keep their rights and their freedom to travel, to work, to retire in every one of the other 27 member states? All those rights, the only way they can get them in Northern Ireland is by getting an Irish passport. Is that fair? Is it not our birthright under the Good Friday Agreement that we...
It's your Belfast Agreement that would require you to assert your Irish citizenship if you want those rights. The Belfast Agreement that says you're entitled to that. You have to assert it by seeking an Irish passport.
I think
brings with it EU citizenship.
I think what we're doing is getting...
Let's consider that question for one moment.
Now, your people have said you need to go, so consider it quick.
Okay.
It's our birthright under the Good Friday Agreement that we can...
It's not our birthright.
It's our birthright
under the Belfast Agreement.
It's where we're born. We're born in Northern Ireland. We don't have to have an Irish passport. Did you get an Irish passport? Or what's going to happen to you?
I have no need for an Irish passport. Thank you very much.
Will you never get an Irish passport, Jim?
I don't see myself ever needing or wanting an Irish passport.
I'm British and very happy with my British passport and look forward to it being back to its royal blue colours.
And Jim, would you just as a point of interest for me,
have an Irish passport?
Sure. And I want to come back to that. I do want to come back to that. But Jim, just as a point of interest, if one of your constituents came to you and said, look, I want an Irish passport, I want to hold on to the EU rights, all of that kind of stuff, would you sign the papers?
Of course I would. I would.
So you have nothing against
a service.
Yeah.
Whether if they're applying
for nothing against it in principle.
Why would I refuse them that service?
So you have nothing against it in principle.
I wouldn't be making that decision.
Yes.
It's their decision.
Yes.
But
it's an entitlement.
Okay. But can I?
And who would I be?
Hold on now. Can I simply ask this question? because I would, it's geekery, but I think it's quite important geekery, all right? So someone like you, Jim, you're against having an Irish passport for yourself, okay? I get that. But surely what Jane is saying this morning is that, have you not, and we've gone off on a tangent here, but it's an interesting one. Have you not got the right, Jim, under the Belfast Agreement to say, I am not having an Irish passport, but the Good Friday Agreement, Belfast Agreement, whatever you want to call it, Jim, gives me the right to have EU citizen entitlement.
Exactly, by birthright. I shouldn't have to have an Irish passport to have to retain my European rights.
The Belfast Agreement.
Everything.
The Belfast Agreement does not give you, in strict legal terms, the right to EU citizenship. The Belfast Agreement gives you the right to Irish citizenship, which then opens the door to EU citizenship.
No, the definition of the people of Northern Ireland in the Good Friday Agreement is born in Northern Ireland.
Okay, can I come back?
Holding a passport,
can I come back
today? And that would be wrong.
Can I come back to one issue I do also want to deal with here this morning? Getting into the politics of all of this, if the delay in the transition period, Jim Allister, does become, Theresa May has talked about months, if that does become 12 months, if that does bring us past a general election, then there's the possibility that the DUP loses its clout if the Tory party regained more MPs and didn't need the DUP, Jim. So how should the DUP try to head that off at the pass now? What should they do? They're never going to have more clout than they do now.
No, absolutely not. First of all, 12 months wouldn't take us past the next general election under the Fixed Parliament Act. The next general election is in 2022.
But those 12 months could become 24, 36 months.
Of course. And if they did, they would take us past the general election. That's why, of course, this whole stratagem of stringing it out is to try and get to the point where they can thwart and reverse Brexit. And if they thought a general election would do that, they'd be all up for it. And yes, you're right. Now is the time when the DUP have maximum power, and now is the time for them to use it. And of course, they're not alone in that. And I welcome the fact that this morning there's been such an adverse reaction from many Conservative MPs to the thought that we should stay in, we should leave in name only, and we should effectively stay in the EU
Jim,
for years to come.
But Jim, and then I'll come back to you.
In Parliament, Mrs. Thatcher or Mrs. May cannot extend this thing without the consent of Parliament, and Parliament will have a vote, and that's when the DUP votes will be critical.
The DUP should use its power right now to recognise that the second best of both worlds is the backstop. It's not about Brussels.
Disastrous.
It's not. Jim, how can you possibly say it's disastrous? It's
because of the very reasons that you say a Irish border would be disastrous, multiplied up many, many times by virtue of the fact that most of our trade is with the place that you want to put the border between us and them.
It's not going to stop that trade, Jim.
It is going to stop it.
Hold on, Jim. Let Jim speak.
And we diverge on regulation.
Go on, Jim.
It's going to make us more attractive to everyone wanting to put inward investment in. That's why Scotland wants the same deal, Jim. I mean, Scotland saying if Northern Ireland gets it, we want it too. Is that because it's bad or because it's better? Come on, give us
Let me explain why it's bad.
Can I please finish? I cannot understand why the DUP isn't seeing this as a valuable offer. And Brussels will never impose it, of course. But if they can see
you
this...
You can, because it starts to make Northern Ireland different from the rest of the UK, and therefore, in some people's eyes, threatens the
Northern
union.
Northern Ireland is different from the rest of the UK. And has been in European Union terms since we joined. We've been objective one, been getting more money than anywhere else in the UK. We've got dual citizenship. We've got the first border with the EU fund. Of course we're different from the rest of the UK. Stop denying it. DUP, I can't believe their logic because they're not stupid. And they surely must
see that what Brussels is offering is an incredibly good deal.
And, Jim,
and this is something we should grab. Yeah.
And Jim, I know you need to go. I know you need to go, Jim. So I really
have my last word.
Well,
on this
and I want to have my last question to you. In fact, there are two. Very briefly, let's answer them quickly, and then you can go. Right. So, first of all, if I flip what you've done with Jim Morris this morning, and you said to Jim Morris, well, look, if you've got this effortless solution for between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, then surely it would apply for the border, then surely it would apply to Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, right? Why does that not also apply to your theory, Jim, that if there is all of this technology in place for a seamless border between the north and the south, why couldn't that same technology, Jim, be used between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK?
Well, because the purpose of having a border in the Irish Sea is that we would be staying in the EU single market. Therefore, we would become increasingly divorced from our main single market, which is the UK single
market. But you'd be using all the technology to make it seamless.
Yes, but the process of years would be, as the United Kingdom develops its own trade policy, makes trade deals with the growth areas of the world, we would be excluded from that. Our two economies would diverge. So a situation where we sell 70% of our goods into our own single market in the United Kingdom would be radically undermined. And in due course, we would be totally divorced from our main single market, with economic catastrophe resulting.
And my final question, Jim, to you, when you've heard, and I've heard you supporting the DUP's threats to Theresa May, that if she does not adhere to their blood red lines, as they've called it, then that they will paralyse, they will seek to paralyse her financial plan, in other words, the budget. How can you, as a unionist, support, because you try to diminish the result of the referendum in Northern Ireland by saying that it was a UK-wide poll and your interest your attention is in the interest of the UK as a whole. How can you support a party that is threatening to scupper the budget as a whole in the interest of the UK?
Don't get carried away. I don't support the DUP. But
no,
I
you
do
support
think
the DUP's policy
right.
when they, with their threat.
I think they're right to use the muscle that they've been
But in using that
in
muscle, would that not
Parliament
potentially damage a government's plan to improve the UK's finances? That's what a government needs to do when it goes to a budget. If they were voting down policies like that to teach Theresa May a lesson, are you not frightened what that would do to the UK economy?
No, I'm not. Look, in the arithmetic of this Parliament, you have to use such tactics as are available to you.
That's not a game, Jim.
Let me make the point. If you were to have a government which says, we're going to allow you, this part of the United Kingdom, to be annexed into the EU, which is what the EU backstop means. If they were to say, we're going to allow that to happen, I wouldn't expect any MP from Northern Ireland to sit on their hands and say, that's all right then. I would expect them to use every device they could to thwart that. And if that included destabilising the government so as they would come to their senses on not allowing the annexation of Northern Ireland, then, of course, they would be entitled to use that tactic.
Final word to you, Jim, because
Because the terminology that's being used is totally inappropriate. Annexation. It's nothing to do with annexation. That's a constitutional thing. Northern Ireland remains part of the UK. That's guaranteed in the Good Friday Agreement until such time as the... But by the way, this is the thing I think that Jim should think about. Surely Paisley's slippery slope could become a slide if this hard border comes up and if Brexit is imposed on us. He's got to think of that. I think Brexit does more damage to the United Kingdom than anything else that comes after it. And I would appreciate if he could respond to that one. I've never heard so much talk about a border poll than I have since Brexit. I mean, surely he should can he not see the wood for the trees? It's madness that the DUP, that all this language of annexation and borders and stuff, there's no change to the constitutional status of Northern Ireland. in the United Kingdom, and that's guaranteed by the Good Friday Agreement unless there's a poll that changes that. Now, why can he not understand that that's the situation and that whatever the DUP are doing, holding Europe to ransom, holding the United Kingdom to ransom, threatening to undo the budget, I mean, is this not total, total folly? Hello?
I think Mr. Alistair might have decided to leave the show this morning. His people were telling my people that he had to go early today.